Well, everyone understands namaste. So, let's do namaste and welcome to episode 10 of The Two Vegans. Welcome to our new listeners. Also, welcome to our existing listeners if you are listening to us one more time.
Yeah, and hopefully you haven't been turned off by that intro.
Hey, that was an amazing intro. What do you mean?
This is episode 10.
Already said that.
No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast.
This is episode 10. Your anniversary.
Yeah, can we actually find out what it is?
But that's 10 years.
Oh, f*** that. I have a lot of hopes for our friendship, but 10 years is maybe stretching it.
What?
I was just checking to see if you were listening to me. You seem to have tuned out at some point.
I don't know what you're doing. Like, we've had the introduction thing at least 5 times.
But hey, everybody. We've got a couple of interesting things to talk about today. We want to first talk about our first community event that was held during Ramadan. On the 2nd of June, we got together with Home and Grounds to go and try out their vegan iftar with some of our listeners. And that was exciting, right?
I think it was a really good event and we had a nice turnout. We met some vegan friends that we only knew online. We were able to put some faces on the names that we knew. Also had a couple of vegan curious people that came and tried out the iftar, which was pretty encouraging.
We asked some of the attendees to like just chat with us. So here's what Joy had to say.
My friend sent me a link onto our... We have a little WhatsApp group. And I was like, all right. And then she didn't show up. So I brought my other friend with me. And she's vegan curious. The ice cream was amazing. I tried everything. I pretty much ate off of everyone's plate. The best dish was the starter with the smashed avocado and the pumpkin on top. It was really good. Yes, and I tried everyone's. Even a person I didn't know next to me who did not finish his dessert, I asked if I could eat some. So anyway.
Yeah, and then she brought along one of her friends who isn't vegan, but calls herself Vegan Cures, which was interesting.
My name is Natalia. My friend, she's vegan. And she said, oh, do you want to come for this vegan iftar? And I said, yes, of course, because that's very interesting. That vegan food is a completely different world for me. And I was just curious. And then the food was really nice today. And I didn't try all the dishes, but whatever I ordered was perfect. The salad was really nice, and the dessert, yeah. Can I pick smoothie? It was really delicious. The smoothie was super nice. Berry, it's all the berries. I wouldn't say like there is something very special about vegan food. It's just food. It's just normal food. Like if you don't make a big deal out of it, it's just any normal food like what we used to eat.
And we've also spoken to somebody who actually listens to our podcast.
The Two Vegans. Well, I listen to them most mornings. I first came across them through a Facebook group. Yeah, I listened. It was quite fun. I enjoyed it. And so that's how I found out.
This is for the first time we met our listener in person, barring our friends and family who we forced the shit out of to listen to our podcast. Here's what Sandy had to say about the iftar.
You can come and eat food without having to worry about, you know, getting this out of it or this or changing it around or something. And it's really nice that so many more cafes and restaurants in Dubai now are offering vegan menus. I think it's fantastic. And it's the way of the future. Hashtag food for our future.
So that was really fun. It was really nice to catch up with everybody and kind of see everybody face to face. Heather, what did you think about the food?
Yeah, I thought the food was really nice. I think they made a lot of efforts to have different kind of options, something that you don't see in regular menus usually. And it was a nice 3-course iftar, so pretty filling. And the best add-on to the iftar was the smoothies. I think their smoothies were brilliant. The options that they had were amazing. I've never had such good smoothies. And I'm not a big fan of coffee, as you know. I'm not at all a fan of coffee, as you know.
Shock, horror, gasp from our listeners.
please don't judge me. But yeah, their coffee smoothie, I think, was one of the best ones they had.
Yeah, it's called Coffee and Dreams with an espresso sorbet.
So yeah, we had a very good turnout. We had good feedback from people. And definitely it's not going to be the last one that we'll do. We're going to follow it up with some more events. Stay tuned, Dubai listeners. Yeah. We are coming for you.
Yeah. So yeah, big thank you to everybody that came, that wrote to us and stuff. Today we're going to do a little bit about the environment, specifically plastics. You know, we've kind of been talking a little bit offline, a little bit with friends, and just looking at stuff actually kind of around the world, right? Where there's a movement that's gaining a lot of momentum, which is the banning of plastics. A large part of this is the environmental impact of it, right? Like we have this issue with plastics and then the remains of plastic not being biodegradable, not easy to dispose, filling up landfills, being dumped in oceans. But for us as well, I mean, when we talk about being vegan and looking and thinking about animal cruelty and stuff like that, one of the direct impacts of plastic, especially with the dumping in the oceans and stuff, and is the impact it's having on animals. I mean, we keep seeing these very, very, very sad pictures and videos of, you know, animals in the ocean that come out wrapped in plastic, right, in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, this is extremely disheartening. But it was also sort of very eye-opening in the fact that, you know, we just think of a single straw that's in a drink or, you know, whatever, the plastic that come in on a six-pack of cans of whatever drink you fancy. But then when you see a bird's head stuck in that, kind of puts things in a very different perspective for us. A couple of months ago, right, so in the first quarter of the year, a lot of restaurants started taking up this mandate to try and reduce the number of plastics.
Yes, of course, every individual should do their bit, but when the corporate and the government come together and do something, it's on a much larger scale and the changes are much quicker. So this year, I guess, we saw a lot of companies and restaurants, particularly in Dubai, going strawless. So I guess the first time I saw it was with Freedom Pizza. Yeah. And the other day I was eating breakfast at Natalie's in Dubai Sports City, and they had the table mat. It was a paper table mat, and it said that ask for going strawless, like hashtag stop sucking. Yeah, that's the hashtag that they're using. And then I was at Fuchsia, and then they had paper straws. Common Grounds had paper straws. So everywhere where we're seeing people are actually making an effort to reduce their plastic consumption, especially single-use plastic, which is one of the biggest contributors to the environmental pollution. I guess it's quite heartening to see that. I mean, the amount of plastic that is consumed in this country particularly is huge. And a little late in the day, but I guess people are now more aware of what's happening and changes are being made. So I guess that's brilliant. And then followed by certain restaurants are now banning cutlery as well.
Yeah, so for example, I mean, Zomato, which is one of the popular directory apps and food ordering apps and stuff like that, now has an option when you order food via Zomato that you can actually send an instruction to the restaurant, like it's a simple checkbox that says, please don't send me cutlery. And this is great, I think, because it's something that sounds very simple. Like all these years, like we've been ordering food from wherever, and quite often we're eating it at home or at someone's house anyway. And invariably, like we just bring these, like, you know, we get these, unless you're sitting in a big group, but like you get these plastic, the plastic spoon and fork and knife that comes wrapped in plastic in and of itself, right? And then it just comes in a bag and we stack it on the side. We never touch it. Right, because we generally eat in our plates and our cutlery, and then we don't necessarily have use for extra plastic knives and forks or whatever. And then invariably, either we collect them, which is all right, and then eventually we'll throw them. Right, so this is kind of a good initiative. I mean, I have to add there though that, like, you know, not all restaurants kind of adhere to it when you send them this instruction, and quite often, I mean, I think it's just part of the process where, you know, when they're packing the stuff and they're putting it together, they just, you know, it's part of the system, like pack this, pack this, pack this, and add. But still, it's nice that, like, again, when we talk about corporations and things doing it, I mean, we look at, for example, you mentioned Common Grounds and doing their straw thing. They actually have the hashtag on the straw that says, I am not plastic, right? And if nothing else, like, even if someone is not aware, A, thankfully, he's not contributing any further, because when he drinks at one of these restaurants or whatever, he's not, even indirectly without knowing. But also when he sees that label on the thing, when you mentioned Natalie's, where it says so on the, you know, on the mat and stuff, it will incite the conversation, right? It will start the conversation, be like, oh, what's this about? Or what's that about? Even if they do it like one day a week, like, so the idea was like, we're doing straw-free Fridays. So on Fridays, we don't serve straws. And I mean, yes, I mean, you know, when we talk about like franchises and those large corporations, even one day of reduction, it's like Earth Day, right? Like we switch off lights one day in the year, which seems very small in terms of like the context of what we're doing. But then that it creates this kind of movement, at least a little bit, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, and I guess like I don't get what is the use of straws anyway. I mean, why were they invented in the first place? I do understand children need it. when they're learning how to drink from glasses. I do understand special needs people need it, but I don't understand why adults who are completely capable of drinking from the glass or the cup need a straw. I just don't get it. I think it's more of a... I mean, it's not even convenience. You know what I mean? I mean, for a very long time, I was using straws and never thought about, do I really need it? You know? Okay, cutlery, yes. When somebody's sending me food, I still get the concept behind it. You know, okay, maybe I don't have... I've just moved into a new home. I don't have my cutlery or my kitchen in place. And it helps. It's handy. It's a good thing that Zomato is now giving us a choice whether we want to have plastic cutlery delivered. But straws, I've never been able to get. And at some stage, when I was reading more, like you said, you know, it's a movement. It starts spreading. And then I questioned myself and I was like... Huh, why am I using a straw? So now I make a conscious effort to either tell him not to get me a straw. And even if I forget about it and if he brings me a straw wrapped in paper, I just put it back or give it back to them and say like, hey, I haven't used it, so maybe you want to reuse it.
Yeah, you're right about the straw thing. I think, I mean, again, this is, you know, educated guessing, but like, you know, the invention of these like slushies and those kind of drinks that are a bit hard to like gulp down. Off a cup, I think that's where probably it started. I mean, at least I know when back in the US and stuff, like you had these like big jugs of drinks, right? And then you needed a straw to do it. In movies and stuff, I think these were some of the use cases where you're sitting in a movie, like it's a bit more precise than drinking out of a cup. So I think it just became a convenience thing and then it just became a habit thing perhaps. But yeah, I mean, and this is where I think with stuff like straws and things like that, I mean, these are it might seem like a small thing, but it's something everybody can do, right? Like you can refuse a straw. But I mean, we're seeing more and more, at least in Dubai, that like a lot of places don't serve straws by default, which is nice. A lot of places are not serving plastic straws anymore, which is also nice. I think I've seen, or at least I've seen some conversation around doing reusable straws.
Yeah, metal straws. Supernatural Kitchen sells them.
Yeah, so there are companies that are doing that as well. And then those become reusable, at least then it's not plastic and it's not getting thrown away.
Yeah, and lately I was watching a video about this guy who runs a restaurant in Canada or the US. I'm not sure. He introduced pasta straws.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
dried pasta. I can see that. Yeah.
So he's actually using those and he says that he's tried metal straws, but they're expensive. He's tried paper straws, but they're messy. Obviously, he wants to get rid of plastic, so that's why he's doing all this. So he's like, I tried a lot of other alternatives and the pasta straws work brilliantly well for me. Mm-hmm. And he's like, they don't leave an aftertaste or whatever. And people are just going and drinking and they're happy with it. So it's all about being creative, I guess.
I mean, we're seeing the same even with things like chopsticks, right? There are, I mean, in fact, this is where I think it's really funny when we talk about things like plastics and stuff like that, is because this wasn't there like a decade ago, maybe a little more than a decade ago, but still, I mean, I think in this part of the world, it's not as widespread, right, as it was a decade ago. So, you know, I've been to restaurants where like the chopsticks that they have on the table are reusable ones. They wash them and they bring them back out, and it's part of the experience. Actually, it was always meant to be like that. But then again, we go back to this thing where we're like, okay, we just want to make it easy to just give it away, and we don't want to deal with like washing it and disposing it and managing it and dealing with all of that. There was also like a number of restaurants in March again when the sort of movements really picked up. So we had, for example, Jumeirah Group came out and said that they were going to ban plastic, especially single-use plastic and stuff, all over all of their restaurants, right? It includes straws as well, but then also things like stirrers and toothpicks and even some cutlery where it was applicable. When you have a chain like Jumeirah Group come out and say that, then that makes such a huge difference as well.
Yeah, I think somebody that needs to jump on this bandwagon is our coffee shops with their coffee cups. And it's very annoying because I go into Starbucks asking for a drink. And
that's where your problem is.
And... yeah, well, any coffee shop for that matter, really. I just said Starbucks because last time I was there. And I order a drink and I tell them specifically that it's not a takeaway. I am going to drink it over here and I still get the disposable ones. Just because they're lazy to wash and clean the ceramic ones.
Well, it also depends on if it's a hot drink or a cold drink.
Why?
All the coffee shops here anyway, like if you ask for a cold drink, they'll always serve it in a plastic cup.
Why?
Because it contains like ice and stuff and you can stir it easily.
Yeah, I mean, I'd prefer drinking my iced tea in a glass, right? Like, I mean, if I'm going out drinking at a bar and if I'm ordering a Long Island iced tea, he's not going to give it to me in a plastic cup because I can stir it.
I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying that's where the line is. So.
that is exactly why I'm making this point, that they need to start giving people ceramic cups. I have kind of like received weird looks from servers as well.
Really?
when I've gone there and I've told them, okay, I'm gonna dine in here, or I'm gonna drink this here, so please give me a ceramic cup. And they've just looked at me like, what? How could you even ask for such a thing? Nobody's ever asked me for such a thing. And you know, sometimes I just don't want to carry it, so I just spend like 10-15 minutes over there, drink it just so that I don't take the plastic back and throw it. Coffee shops, please, if you're listening, stop taking advantage of these disposable cups. And
I've seen this, I think it's a pretty standard thing in coffee shops here, where like cold drinks are always served in the closed containers, with so you can put a straw in and drink it and stuff like that, compared to the hot ones. But I've even seen them do it with the hot ones. Like, I have had to specifically say, like, just give it to me in a mug, I just want hot coffee, I'm sitting right here. And they issue it in a cup, in a plastic cup. Which, by the way, is not a fun experience to drink anyway, like hot coffee in a plastic cup. A lot of the malls, we're seeing this in a lot of residence areas. We're seeing this in a lot of like these sort of community areas, like the shopping places, like we look at the city walks and whatever, where you're starting to see like plastic disposal, plastic disposal points, in the trash and stuff like that, to separate out the plastic in terms of disposal when you're coming out of these restaurants, you're coming out of these cafes and stuff like that, which is a nice thing. More work has to be done in just reducing the amount to begin with, rather than finding better ways to dispose it as well. Ooh, another interesting thing. So I was at Lulu hypermarket. In their checkout station, they've got something called a green counter, right? So their checkout station, when you go there, there are no plastic bags available there. Yeah, this is not an option on those counters, right?
Wow. When did they start this?
I don't know. I saw it today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it must be fairly
new then.
And I like that it's a better targeted approach, right? Because then, you know, the people going there, like the people who come in with these sort of reusable bags. And, you know, I find this really funny. So like 10 years ago, 12 years ago in the US, there was this movement to try and... when plastic bags became really popular there. Right, and so all the shops had started stacking it and stuff like that, and there was this huge sort of fight back coming from sort of the population at that time. That awareness had already begun to say, like, you know, I prefer a paper bag and I want to take a paper bag home. And thankfully, not the case anymore. But I used to see a lot of places that would put the paper bag inside the plastic bag and then give it to you. It was a long time ago.
Like the banana wrapped in individual plastic every time.
Yeah, that's what we need to talk about that too. But so there was already that clamor going on. And I think when you look at this part of the world and which got sort of these larger chain-like supermarkets much, much later, when all of these things had already been tried and tested, they came with plastic bags. We didn't go through that transition, right? We didn't actually have paper bags first and then we got plastic bags. It just went straight to plastic bags. And so it just became this thing. And I think a couple of years ago, there was an attempt. I know Gion did it, but like... All the supermarkets introduced the reusable bags I think it was like 5 dirhams, which is about a little over a dollar, to buy the bag, and then you can just bring it back and keep reusing it. If you didn't buy the bag, if you didn't have it or whatever else, you got sort of stuff in a plastic bag anyway with no cost. And so I think Jean was tried to do that, where they introduced a fee for every plastic bag you took as a way to deter people from taking too many plastic bags. But I don't think they actually ever really enforced it in any way. We were talking about this the other day too, right? Like, especially when you look at places like India, where we know this, or our grandparents and stuff like that. Like, bags were not something a shop ever gave you, period. Like, I mean, again, I'm not talking about the big chain stores and stuff, but I mean, you know, your local vegetable seller and your local food and grains person or market or pharmacist, whatever, didn't give you anything to carry stuff in. You carried in whatever you brought with you. And it was very common practice for, I guess, our grandparents and stuff to actually carry like reusable bags, jute bags and cotton bags and these kind of things to the shop so that they could fill it up and bring the stuff back home.
The look that you got from the shopkeeper had you dared ask him for one extra bag.
Yeah, right? It'd be like, hey, can I get a bag? And he'd be like, what
no,
are you talking about?
I don't have any. I'm sorry. No, just no.
Because we were used to growing up here and used to getting bags everywhere. And then you kind of walked into a supermarket being like, all right, this is what I got. And they're like, where's your bag to carry this stuff, buddy?
Yeah. Now, like, I lived in India for a brief period of 7 years in Mumbai. And I remember my mom was like, hey, why don't you go down and get some milk or whatever?
Milk.
Those days when I wasn't a vegan, I would end up buying some more, and I'd be like, "Hey, sorry, can I have one more bag?" And he would be like, "No." And I was like, "But look, I have a lot of stuff in my hand." And he's like, "Yeah, figure it out. Just no." And I was like, "Dude, like, come on, what is wrong with you? It's just one more plastic bag." And now I appreciate that guy's existence so much. But at that time, I was like, "What a douche!" You know?
It's right. Like, it seemed like he was unnecessarily slighting you for not having carried your own bag. I mean, again, it's a bit anecdotally, but I think even in India, like all of this plastic stuff, you saw it primarily in the big cities, I mean, in Mumbai and stuff, but not in so much the tier two cities. But there you see it now when, you know, these chain stores have started coming up and then that became a thing. But thankfully, they're also looking at it and they also started charging for the bags now. Yeah, it's a good deterrent to stop people from doing that. But, you know, let's also talk about the amount of plastic that gets used inside the supermarket.
I can't get that image of the banana in the plastic out of my head and an apple in the plastic. I don't know if it happens in other countries, and do let us know if it happens in yours. But in the UAE, at these convenience stores, we've got individual bananas wrapped in plastic. Why did God not think of protecting that banana by giving it a skin? Like, we definitely need plastic to protect it from rotting away.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean...
because nature hasn't taken care of that.
You know, one thing I noticed, so when I was in the US, we didn't have these measure the weight of the vegetables and fruits, like at the section of the vegetables and fruits. We had it at the checkout. And I was just thinking about this the other day where, you know, when you walk into any of these supermarkets today, especially here, and they're kind of doing this weighing and labeling and weighing and labeling process that happens in like full speed. And each bag is its own plastic bag, wrap, sometimes double because the size of the vegetable is such that it doesn't fit into the thing, or you're buying like this tremendous cauliflower like some of us do, and you can't pack it. And so you use one plastic bag here, one plastic bag here, and they seal it with the label and all of this stuff. And I was just thinking to myself, like, why is that the process, right? I mean, I understand from the shop's point of view, right? Like, you pick up three bananas and then you get it labeled, but you don't have a bag or you don't have something that contains it. You could potentially add three more bananas and walk out with the same label because the checkout is only going to look at the label that's there and not the thing. So I understand why they seal it. But then when you look at a system where the stuff gets weighed at the checkout itself, then this danger is kind of, you know, not there. Like, I mean, you're going to check out with the six bananas and they're going to weigh it right there, and they don't even have to waste a label, by the way, because they can just punch it right into the thing and it's done, right? Like, they don't even have to issue the label. I mean, I'm guessing they want to try and make the lines more efficient, because if there's weighing going on there, it might be a bit harder or whatever. But I've even seen, when I went back to the US a couple of years ago, I've even seen where they have the self-checkout. You weigh the stuff right there and put it away, which seems like another way to try and help reduce plastic bags, and not just the plastic bags you take the food out in, but also the plastic bags in which you wrap every vegetable.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at the survey, and it says that about 1 trillion bags are used around the world a year. The kind of pictures that we've seen on the internet where I saw this one video of a straw stuck into a turtle's nose. And these guys who were in a boat, they rescued it and they spent quite a lot of time trying to remove that straw. It was stuck so deep inside, they had to use pliers and stuff to pull it out, and his nose was bleeding. And then obviously they treated him and released him, but it's so sad. And why only marine animals? I mean, if you look at the cows on the streets in India who are no longer of use for producing milk or are not fit enough for slaughter, and then they're just released in the streets to fend for themselves. You find like tons of plastic in their digestive systems because they've consumed that out of hunger. And it's appalling what we're doing to nature and what we're doing to the world. And it's kind of heartening to see that we are recognizing it on a larger scale and trying to make the changes. Starting off with India, Maharashtra, which is the state that has Mumbai city in it, has recently banned plastic in the entire state. Very impressive. It is the 18th state that has now banned plastic in the country. And they're targeting mainly single-use plastic. So cutlery, straws, plastic bags, food containers, PET bottles. Goodbye, Coca-Cola and Pepsi dreams. You're going down the drain like anything. Yeah, they mostly use glass bottles over there. Yeah,
especially in the non-cities. Like, so if you look at the smaller towns and tier two cities and all of that, primarily that's what. I mean, that was the case in Mumbai when we grew up. You just stack the glass, put them back to the person, and they refilled it for you.
Yeah, and you just go on these street side vendors and you ask them for a Coke. They give you a glass bottle. You stand over there, you finish it, and you return it then and there itself. And if you had to take it home, then he would expect you to come back the next day and return it, or would send his guy to collect all the bottles.
This whole pretty like integrated thing, because you know the you got some rebate when you returned a series of glass bottles, and then he got a rebate from Coca-Cola or whatever the distributor was on the chain to like return the bottle back. And so it was extremely important for him to return the bottle, and then equally important to collect it from you. And kind of it became like this, it's almost like this VAT thing, right? Like everybody's a tax collector. So like everybody wants to ensure that everybody below him in the chain makes sure that we do it. And I think it was, it used to be annoying when we were kids, but now you look back and you're like, actually, that was a good, less wasted system.
Yeah, now that you're looking at it in terms of plastic bags and PET bottles, like India was doing stuff that needs to be done now in the world 20 years ago. And we were then forced by consumerism to start doing things that people are doing now that we're not supposed to do.
It's also created a tremendous amount of outrage. And so you see this conversation, and my take on that is the same that I had last time, which is if something is incorrectly being done, whether you look at it incorrect, illegal, or morally wrong even, then you stop doing that. Like, the goal has to be to stop doing that. Not to say that, well, 10 jobs are going to be lost because of this, therefore we're just going to hold out and let the rest of the earth suffer and the environment suffer and our future generations suffer and all that fun stuff. And then look at who's being displaced and deal with that. Of course you have to deal with that. And of course, I think the government as well has to take some steps to help out and sort of help set up the other industries, the cloth bag industries and stuff like that. But there's potential, right, for a whole new market to grow anyway. I mean, you look at, especially in India, where you have cloth bags and jute bags and all this, but the demand for this is going to increase in a state like this. So
it's very important for us to stop our whataboutry in everything that we, if the government is trying to bring a change, I guess people must learn to accept it, try and understand the reason behind the change before protesting against it. And if a plastic factory is closed, it would probably be replaced by a, bamboo factory for that matter, and those people could get a job again. Yes, it is a little bit of a shift and it is inconvenient, but it is not difficult and it's definitely not impossible. And people need to learn to appreciate these things, because that's how you bring change, and change is not always easy. So
yeah, sometimes it has to be drastic. I mean, you look at the numbers you talked about. You know, you can't suddenly say like, all right, well, a year from now, like, we'll do this, because that's a trillion bags that will, you know, be entering into the system, and somewhere you need to like sort of pull the plug a little bit more harshly then.
Yeah, it's probably going to take us another 15-20 years to clean the mess that we've made, if at all we're going in that right direction, right? It's not going to happen like overnight. Plastic bag takes about 450 years to biodegrade.
This is not saying that like we shouldn't look at the implementation of these things, we shouldn't look at the scalability of some of this stuff and try to see how we can make that better. I think with some of this stuff, I mean, you know, you kind of have to put your foot down somewhere. And so I think it's important to look at that intent and say, okay, this needed to be done regardless. Let's figure out how we can make the rest of it work.
And to give people a perspective on what happens when you start this change, Ireland reduced their plastic bag consumption by 90%, which is over 1 billion bags, between 2001 and 2011, just by imposing a minor plastic bag tax of 37 cents. It did take them 10 years. Because that's how long it takes to clean this mess, and maybe more for a country like India. But yeah, it is possible. It is, it's completely non-negotiable. Like, I don't even want to weigh down any particular reason of not having this in place.
Another example comes from our favorite company, McDonald's. Are you excited about this?
Yeah.
Are you excited? As of September 2018, McDonald's in the UK, no more plastic straws. And McDonald's in the UK uses 1.8 million straws a day. A day. We've mentioned McDonald's, I think, the most on this podcast as a restaurant. And I think that's very interesting to me personally, because I'm opposed to what McDonald's does, right? On principle.
No, but this is actually interesting. I didn't realize this. Hilton Hotels vowed to ban plastic by end of 2018. And an estimated 25 million single-use plastic items a year will be removed from hotels across Middle East, Europe and Africa.
So Anantara and Avani Hotels, their Asia properties have already stopped using plastic straws, and then the UAE properties will join this.
Wow, again. What is happening, man?
No, it is actually, I think it's a huge movement. I think some of the places are doing it out of a real conscience of like actually understanding the impact. Here's another example that came out here. Was the Noodle House removed plastic straws earlier this year as well. They have 380,000 straws entering landfills every year. And so I think it's part good PR. It's also sort of the governments and stuff sort of actively promoting these use cases and trying to get these companies on board to join them in these initiatives. And we've seen that in India and other countries. And then you have, I think, also the the people, right? I mean, you have companies that, whatever their motivations are, they're very in tune with feedback and they actually listen. We've seen this grow in the age of social media in particular. And I think that, like, no company wants to lose themselves, right? I mean, how many people do we know, like, in our circles around us that actually think about plastic bags? I mean, there are quite a few of them, right? Like, they, who kind of talk about it all the time, talk about carrying, you know, these reusable bags and stuff like that. I mean, they do that. And so I think that's also making its sort of impact. Maybe not so much applicable here, but you see this, like, you know, people start, like you said, people put taxes on plastics, importing plastics and stuff. So it actually starts to become expensive for restaurants and hotels. And so when an alternative comes in, and as soon as an alternative is available, they'll jump on it.
And if you're still not convinced about why you should stop or reduce your plastic usage, do it for your own health, because I guess plastic eventually returns in our food chain with all the microplastics in it and all the fibers that come off it, and you're eventually ingesting it yourself. Yeah, it's not only good for the environment, for the marine animals, but it's also good for you that you stay away from plastic. Look for alternatives in your nearest city, in your country, in your neighborhood. Try switching to environmental friendly, biodegradable alternatives.
So we've been talking about plastics on this episode, and I think there's a lot of good stuff that's happening. We are super fortunate, in fact, to bring you interesting information coming from the European Union. You'll be hearing now from Jody Quirk, who has worked with the European Commission since 2014. He's a legal and policy officer with the Sustainable Chemicals Unit in the Directorate General of the Environment for the European Commission, part of the EU. So we had a chance to ask him a bunch of questions around the stuff that the EU is doing, but also in terms of what some of the challenges are. So to begin with, you know, we asked him what the current threat is in terms of plastic usage. I mean, you know, what are some of the stats like? What are the numbers that, the European Union is dealing with?
Currently, 5 to 13 million tons of plastic end up in the oceans every single year. 80% of marine litter is plastic. Around 50% of marine litter is plastic that is only used once, what is referred to as single-use plastic. Even more alarming, if the current business-as-usual scenario continues, there will be more plastic than fish in the ocean by 2050. Regarding the situation in the EU itself, the reality is that there's quite a low amount of plastic recycling currently done in the EU. Only 30% of plastic waste in Europe is currently recycled. In addition, 95% of the value of plastic packaging, over 100 billion euro to the economy, that is lost to the economy every year. Another important point in this plastic story is the global situation. And quite recently, in 2017, China has introduced a ban on the import of plastic waste. This affects a lot of different countries and parties, including the EU, because up to 60% of EU plastic waste had previously been sent to China to be treated, and this now needs to be dealt with in other ways.
You know, those are honestly, those are some scary stats, aren't they? So we also asked him about the initiatives in terms of what the EU is doing. And I think it's something that is really interesting in terms of policy and direction, you know, in terms of trying to take care of the manufacturing end of plastics. And then also looking at some of the things that the EU is doing in terms of discouraging people from using plastics.
The European Commission published a plan which is called the Circular Economy Action Plan, which included among the different actions the development of a plastic strategy to combat these challenges caused by the current use of plastics. This was prepared in 2016 and 2017 and was then published this year in January. It's important to note that this plastic strategy does not ban plastics, and it's not an anti-plastic strategy. Instead, the strategy recognizes the good that plastic can do if it's properly used and properly harnessed. And the intention of the strategy is to put in place the right facilities to harness the benefits that plastic can have and remove the harmful effects and results as much as possible. So the EU's plastic strategy is based around four main themes or objectives. Firstly, to improve the economics and quality of plastics recycling. Secondly, to curb plastic waste and littering. Thirdly, to drive investments and innovation towards circular economy solutions. And fourthly, to harness and inspire further global action. These steps will only be achieved if you have the right economic incentives and that there is a need for investment in both infrastructure and innovation. All players are involved, both in industry and the value chain, but not only business, but also civil society, the scientific community, non-governmental organizations, and local authorities. The plastic strategy itself, it contains a list of actions and tools that are intended to provide the necessary support to improve the underdeveloped market for recycled plastics in the EU. EU funds will continue to support research to close the knowledge gaps and help to find innovative solutions and investments to upgrade the infrastructure across the EU. The targets that the plastic strategy set are that by 2030, all plastic packaging is recyclable. More than 50% of plastic waste is recycled, and that sorting and recycling capacity is quadrupled compared to 2015 levels. And the hope is that this has the potential to create an extra 200,000 jobs. The Commission is also planning regulatory action to tackle the particular issue of microplastics, single-use plastics and fishing gear, because they can fragment if they are not properly disposed of. And what the Commission is considering doing is to draft legislative measures to ban or restrict the intentional addition of microplastics in products. For example, they are currently intentionally added to cosmetics or detergents or paints on the basis of work that is being carried out in the EU by the European Chemicals Agency.
And finally, Jody also shared with us the kind of efforts they're making in terms of removing plastic altogether.
As I mentioned earlier, one of the main objectives of the plastic strategy is to try and harness efforts at a global level as well. And the EU thinks that this can be achieved under the 12th goal of the UN Sustainable Development Goals, which is to ensure sustainable consumption and production patterns. And the EU is involved in work both at G20 and also the United Nations Environmental Assembly, and is supporting waste management around the world with a focus on Asia and also the Mediterranean regions. We think that the EU plastic strategy from this year will be an important stepping stone towards that aim. Thank you very much for listening to me, and I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
So a special thanks to Jody, who shared a ton of insight with us on this episode. As always, Heath, we'd like to tell our listeners how they can subscribe to us.
So you can find us on the podcast player of your choice, and you can also look us up on Google. We're called The Two Vegans. Look us up on Instagram, the.2.vegans. We're also on Twitter, and our handle is The Two Vegans, and also on Facebook. Please stalk us. Please let us know about any of the plastic stories that you'd like to share from your country.
Excellent. You can find more information about the show notes, and other things by visiting our website at amaya.fm/2vegans.
And keep on keeping on. Ciao. Dun, 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 dun. Dun!